Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm so excited to be here. As Steve said, make sure you visit our website, www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. There you will find information about upcoming events and also information as it pertains to life. I have my co-host with me, Shirley Carter. Shirley, are you there?
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us this evening. I am so excited about our guest today. I mean, we're going to talk to a woman that is so powerful that she's going to inspire you to get up and get yourself in order. I was telling Val when I looked at her photo, and I said, oh, my God, she's beautiful. I said, but yet you can see the strength in her. This young lady name is Sherita Wiggins. Now, Shanita Wiggins has over 20 years combined experience in education, creative design, technical and creative writing skills, advanced technology skills, along with her degree in both education and technology. This lady has decided to step beyond that and develop online content development for technology and distant education. So you can learn from her so much, and she's the editor of her own company, Carmel Velocity Nation. It's a publishing company, and she's had two books that she's published under there, and as well as she's on her way to releasing her book, The Rise of Phoenix, One Woman's Rebirth to Liberation. We are so excited to have her with us this evening. And Val, you know, I said she's got so many things going, and she's in entertainment, she's a poet, she's a singer, she's a writer, she's an author. I was like, oh, my gosh, she's a powerhouse in one person. So I'm excited.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm excited. I tell you, I met her a couple of weeks ago in Atlanta when, you know, when I shared that I had the opportunity to go to the event with Dr. Maya Angelou, and a good friend of mine, Rodney Adams, said, Val, I want to introduce you to somebody. And he brought this queen before me, Shanita Wiggins, and she was, we started talking, and we had so much in common. I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God. I said, you know, it's so funny how our lives parallel one another. And we're going to bring before you Shanita Wiggins. She's an entrepreneur, speaker, poet, and she has a new book on the horizon, Rise of the Phoenix, One Woman's Rebirth to Liberation. Shanita, are you there?
Yes, I am, and thank you again for having me this evening. It's truly a pleasure. I was listening to all the accolades, and I was like, wow, they're talking about me. But I do thank you. When you get to doing and wearing a lot of hats, you tend not to think about that it adds on. You just figure that you're just working in your purpose.
Absolutely. As I said, we have so much in common. I've written four books, and when I began telling you about my book, especially my first one, From the Soul of a Woman, Love Shouldn't Hurt, and we began to pull back layers in our lives, you know, I often talk about how we have secrets, that we have emotional vaults that are secrets, and we lock them away until we have the opportunity to share it with somebody that's not going to be hostile towards us. So, Shanita, your book, Rise of the Phoenix, One Woman's Rebirth to Liberation, can you share with our listening audience exactly what that book is about and why you thought at this dispensation of your life, it is the right time to release such a powerful weapon?
Well, first of all, the book, I've actually been working on it for about 3 years now. Even when it came into my spirit to share my story, I wasn't quite sure how I was going to do that. And as I began to work on it and God began to develop it inside of me, I began to consider writing it from the fictional perspective rather than the realistic for many reasons. One, of course, protecting those that were close to me that were involved in it. So, the character, Myesha, in the book, shares a lot of the things that I went through in my life as a woman, as a mother, as a wife, and a lot of the hurts and pains. I often tell people that I don't feel like I came into my own until I was 43 years old, and that's because that was at the moment of the pinnacle moment that I was able to start being who I really was inside. The book is centered around the character that has endured many hardships at the hands of her ex-husband. And because of that, even at the end of their departure, she didn't even think she would find love or happiness again. She thought that after the brokenness that, you know, it would leave scars that she would be able to move forward, but she finds that she is now better and not bitter. And in the midst of it, she realized that her sacrifice brought her before her knight in shining armor, so to speak. And, of course, the story plays out and it shares. It starts in the beginning of where her life is right now, and then she goes back into variations of what she went through to get to where she is now. And I incorporate a lot of my poetry and writings that I actually did during that time to share in the space and the pain and things that I was feeling at that moment. And as I began to write it in that form, it was better. It allowed me to be more free with sharing by, you know, moving some things around. Those who are close to me will recognize some things that happened, and even those that knew of me might kind of wonder. So I wrote it in a perspective where, you know, it's not going to harm anybody, but it's going to help. Because, you know, a lot of times we go through things and we don't talk about it because we're afraid about what people will think about us. But the stories have to be told, whether you tell it realistically or whether you tell it in a fictional character.
Absolutely. You know, I had that when I was writing my book, In the Soul of a Woman. I toiled with it because it is my life story. And although I didn't name names or anything, it was my story. And people that knew me could identify, and when they were like, wow, I didn't realize you went through what you went through.
Exactly.
But I did it very tastefully. It was done very tactfully. Matter of fact, even my ex-husband was bragging about the fact that I had written a book and how it was selling and all that. It was done so tactfully, he didn't realize he was in it.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I'm sure
so that's
Shirley can identify with that too. See, Michael, she's written a book too, and you know, it's amazing how the things that we go through, we struggle through, and we be like, why me? But it's actually, why not you? And that we're going through it so that we can be a testament and reach back and help someone else. So, you know, the book Rise of the Phoenix, where do you begin with the story, with your story in the book?
I actually began with Myesha and her husband on their way home on a Friday evening. And the prologue is a pretty intense prologue. People that know me or know of my poetic abilities to write creatively, I pretty much kind of keep it real. And what I mean by that, there's an actual scene in here between she and her husband where she's free to express herself to him intimately that kind of shares with the readers the depth of love that they share and the freedom that she shares in this life that she has right now. So it takes place at that moment of her kind of, you know, looking, stepping back and seeing everything that God has blessed her with and just kind of taking it all in and realizing that, you know, everything that I went through before I got here, it was all worth it, you know. And so, but she does periodically go back and reminisce about some hurts and some pains and some things that she dealt with. But, of course, it comes back to the realities and show, you know, the woman that she is now and the struggles. And she even deals with a particular illness during this time, but it's played out in such a way that it shows the strength and magnitude of her husband and his love for her versus what she would have dealt with or she dealt with her ex-husband or her past relationship. So I wanted women to read this and be able to say, you know, I too, or how did she, you know, make it through this type of thing, and then to be able to read what it was that helped me to get through. And such a creative way to give them hope, you know, by sharing that, you know, just because one situation did not work does not mean that the door is not still open for you to really experience true love with someone that really cares about you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in the book, so do you have an excerpt you want to share?
Yeah, I'll read. I have one that actually takes place between Myesha and her present husband, and then she it goes into briefly a moment that she had prior to meeting her husband. Mm-hmm. This is in the prologue, and it says, Myesha was now jolted back into her bedroom with a gentle nudge of Mason's leg on hers. Baby, why are you awake so early? It's Saturday, and we finally have a few hours to sleep in. I know you're tired from last night, so go back to sleep, he said. I know. I was just thinking about when we first met and realizing that it was the greatest day of my life, Myesha said. Mason leaned over and kissed her on her forehead. I feel you. It was that way for me too, he replied. And Myesha then began to understand why she had to go through so much pain and torment in her life. It was to bring her to this moment, a place in her life where she is finally living her happily ever after. But it wasn't always that way. There was a time when she felt like she was living in purgatory. At that thought, she turned on her side and her mind went back again, this time to a place she rarely likes to visit. Dear diary, taunting spirits, how far will it go? Tell, where do I go from here? What do I trust? I cannot tell which way to go. I'll do what I must. Days are going by. They turn into months, and weeks don't exist at all. The pain and the hurt have been too much to bear. Too many things have happened. How can I trust him again? How do I erase it all? Please, God, help me out. Help me to be on my way to my true destiny. I need a positive direction, not clouded, not desolate, but true. I feel like a stranger in my own home. People around me are different, and I feel like I am suffocating. Myesha. And so that ends that part of it, and it's kind of showing the two sides of her, of a woman that is now, you know, experiencing a true life, a life she's always dreamed of. And then she can't help but allow her mind to go back to what it took to get to that place. And that's the way that I want to be drawn in, to see if they're still in that space, if they're still dealing with that type of situation, that they can have hope that, you know, it's just for a moment, and it depends on the choices that you make at that time to determine if you'll be freed up to experience the true liberation that you can have.
So, you know, the title itself, Rise of the Phoenix, and then you talk about rebirth and liberation. If you were counseling someone who's trying to begin again, because that's the type of people that I usually am drawn to and attract, are those individuals that have fallen by the wayside of life. They're sitting in their cars parked with the engine running. They don't know how to move forward in life. What would you say would be the first thing that an individual could do to start reclaiming their life?
Well, first of all, and I can only speak from my own experience and perspective, First, you got to look within yourself and decide and determine when enough is really enough. You know, it varies for each individual, and it's easy for us to tell someone to move on, to stay, to go, when we're not in their shoes because we don't know all of the underlying factors that it takes for them to deal with things day to day. So what I would share with them is to, first of all, decide what is it that you want out of life? What is it that you want out of your relationship? And when they've defined that or narrowed it down, are you getting that? If you're not, what do you think it's going to take for you to get that or to get to that point? And if it's not a dual, and what I mean by dual, both individuals are willing to work on themselves to deal with the situation, then you can't get to that space of happiness that both of you can share. Because, you know, the Bible tells us, how can two walk together except they agree? And, you know, I can say, well, I want to be happy, or this is what it takes for me to be happy. But if my spouse is not on the same page or is not desiring the same thing or has a different perspective, and that goes the same for men. There are men that deal with women in similar situations, you know. So, you know, it would have to be, what is it that will make you happy? And if you're not, what can you do to get there? And that will be the first step. And the reason I chose the title, The Rise of the Phoenix, because if you know the mythical background about a phoenix, it's a bird that once it gets so weighted in the burdens that it bears, it will disintegrate. But even after it disintegrates, it's reborn again from the ashes to a whole new life. And so that's what I looked at myself when my that phase of my life ended. You know, I don't regret the journey because it made me the woman who I am today. But I had to, you know, that part of my life was weighted enough that now it was time for that person to disintegrate. And now the person to be reborn that and to live the life that I'm living right now, free of control, free of mental, physical, or spiritual abuse, free from all the things that was holding me back to do the things that I knew was inside of me. You know, there's so many different ways that we talk about freedom, and I was married for 19 years. So it wasn't like I couldn't hold on or deal with longevity in a relationship. It was just that I realized that the relationship had run its course, and what I saw as being happy was not the same thing as what he saw. So in a sense, we both became liberated because now we're better friends than we were ever husband and wife.
Okay. You know, I had this conversation with a dear friend last weekend. I was telling Shirley about it, about this person came to me and was saying they were, like, really broken. They'd been going through a transition in a church and stuff, and, you know, they'd never been married, but desires desperately to be married, but have not been able to hold on to or maintain in a relationship because of past hurts, past pain. And this individual said to me, I have no idea who I am. I've been so busy trying to be everything that everybody says I am till I've lost myself in the process. And we do that so easily. You know, women are emotional beings, and we hold on and have the ability sometimes to gravitate to whoever is strong around us. And when that person is strong, then we become a follower, and then they dictate our reality of who we're supposed to be. And I found myself doing that in my marriage because when I was married, I was trying to do everything to please my husband, and then when I had the children, I did everything to please the children. So the more I did for other people, I diminished, and what my needs and my thoughts were didn't matter. And that's the way it was, and I was okay and satisfied with that perspective until the break came.
Right.
And when the break came, it was like I was like a deer in headlights. I was like somebody had dropped me off on a planet, and I had to find my way again. I had to I had to learn how to go to the grocery store and shop for what I liked and what I wanted and I thought the family needed. I had to find out how to redress myself because I dressed the way that my husband wanted me to dress, so my desires didn't matter. I had to learn how to, you know, communicate and talk to my children where I was the authoritative figure in their life and what I said goes, not what, well, wait till your father comes or I'll see what your dad says. So I had to relearn the process and pull back the layers so that I can see the flower that was inside. And a lot of people are like that, male and female, in that same situation, because a lot of times the man also falls into that category where he's so in love with that individual that he gets caught up and distracted in his own life till he begins to evolve around that woman because she is the wings beneath his wings, and he wants to do everything. He is to please her, and a lot of times it's that situation when a young man is raised by a single mother. I have found that more than likely that's when that happens, and also when they see a nurturing heterosexual where there is a mother and father present. So in saying that, you know, you gave your synopsis of what it would take to move forward, and Shirley, you can chime in if you want to interject because, you know, you basically raised three boys as a single mother. And, you know, Shanita, I just don't like when women be like, well, I don't know how to raise a son. But, yeah, we do know how to raise sons. I've raised two. Two sons and two daughters. So we can, as women, raise a male and raise him where they can be productive in the earth.
And not only be productive in their lives and everything, but they also, I find that when you're really involved in your son's life and you're raising him, it helps them to learn how to treat a woman.
Mm-hmm.
What things do you want your son to learn as far as loving a woman? Because I was in an abusive relationship with my first marriage, and I thought that, you know, and Val, I could identify so much with pleasing that man, how to dress, what he wants to eat, how does he want the house to look, what is his decor like. I lived my life through him, and I had to actually go and get help to reclaim my life, to get my power back. So in raising my sons as a single parent, and even at one point being married to a stepfather there and still single, I had to teach them that you respect a woman. You love her. If you love her, you don't hurt her. And physical and emotional hurt are on the same level as far as I'm concerned. And so my boys have grown up to know that love shouldn't hurt. And Val, you talk about that all the time.
And that's great. And that's actually brought out in the book as well because, you know, Maisha has two sons and a daughter, which, of course, is similar to myself. And unfortunately, my children had to experience something that I always said I did not want them to have to deal with, because I grew up watching or spent my early childhood watching my mother being physically abused. And, of course, it ultimately led to her death. So I said, well, I would not marry someone that's like that. And it's interesting that what we grow up around or what we are familiar with, we tend to still gravitate to subconsciously. And so I ended up, and I was married once before, but that didn't last for 4 years because it was so abusive. I was fearful, literally, of my life. The second marriage dealt with some of that, and unfortunately my sons and daughter, she was a little younger, but the oldest one remembers a lot of the physical abuse to the point that he would not go to sleep at night because he was afraid to hear arguing going on. Or wondering what was going to happen. And he thought even at that age he was supposed to protect me. And there were times when he was a teenager, excuse me, he actually stood between me and a gun, you know, and while I was on the phone with 911 because my life was being threatened at that time by his stepfather. And, you know, and so I myself constantly talk to them, don't look at your dad as an example of how to treat a woman, you know, because they watched the infidelity. They were brought around other women that came into the relationship, you know. So to them, it was like, okay, do we do what dad does, or do we do what mom says to do? And I had to, and it wasn't really until they became old enough to get in relationships themselves, and they began to see how it hurt or how it felt, that that's not something you do. And I always explain to them, don't treat your girlfriend any way that you don't want your mom or your sister treated. Mm. I taught them how to cook, how to clean. I explained to them, cooking and cleaning is not a woman's job. It's a family's job. It's a couple's job. And you all join in together. I said, your wife, even if both of you work, if she comes in tired, you can get in there and do the dishes or clean up or cook. The same way, don't expect them, and I don't teach them that this is what you expect for this woman to do other than what God instructs her to, the same way as she's expecting you to do what God instructs you to do. And because of it, even the relationships they've been in, that's one thing the young ladies would say is that, well, yeah, he cooks and he cleans, and that's different because they're not used to that. Because I share with them, this, you have to be sensitive to the woman's needs. And if you're sensitive to her needs, there's nothing she won't do for you. And that was the mentality of the reason why, and I hear what you all said, I did that same thing because I was everything to everybody but Nita. And, of course, I got lost into it, even to being told when I knew the gifts that I had inside of me, and, you know, people were saying, well, everybody doesn't do all of that. And I'm like, well, God gave them to me, so they must be there for a reason. And I began to back away from gifts of, what I love to do as an artist, as a poet, you know, and I'm what they call an even brain person. So I have both sides operating strongly. And because people were telling me what I should be doing, and I figured, okay, to keep them happy, maybe that's what I should do. I did lose myself. And that's why I mentioned in the book that finally my Isha has come into a place of her own, and not just her now-present husband, but herself. She had to get off to herself. There's a moment where it shows where she had to find herself again and promote her own self-happiness so she could be better and not bitter. And that was one of the phrases I began to say because as I went through my divorce, I went through spiritual turmoil with, you know, church people, I put it that way, where people saying, you know, divorce is forbidden, blah, 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 but they didn't live in my house. They didn't see what happened behind closed doors. And that they did see out, that was so open in the public, I still had people that would say, well, I can't understand why you're still there. So it was kind of a catch-22. I was damned if I didn't and damned if I did. But I thank God that through prayer and supplication and fasting, and it was not easy and it did not come overnight. I experienced a lot of things. I went through a lot of things. Ultimately, I got the strength and the confidence to walk away and say, I can do this. And it wasn't until my last two graduated from high school that my youngest son, after seeing different things that were still going on, say, now, Mom, what is your excuse? You know, and that was a reality check to me, because at the end of the day, we allow ourselves to remain in situations based on what we feel we can bear or what we think the outcome should be. And I think there's sometimes a level of comfort that makes us remain there because we know to step out means to start all over again. But that's the thing that I had to do.
Wow.
That's where the rebirthing came, I was able to step from behind those walls and say, you know what, I can do this. I might have to start from scratch. Fine. I've been there. You know, I might have to do it on my own. Fine. You know, I'm not by myself. God is with me. And little by little, I was able to rise above my situations to where I am right now. And I can only say I'm so humble. And I thank God for the people he placed in my life that helped me along the way. I did not do this on my own accord. You know, I did have those prayer warriors. I did have, you know, God cut away and he pruned. And I tell anybody, when God prunes, let him prune. Because when he prunes and cuts away things, that gives you the ability to flourish. Because a lot of times we get weighted down. but it's situations like this radio show, like other shows that open the door for people to share their testimony and experiences, whether it's through entertainment or through empowerment conferences, to share and let other people, men and women, know that we're not alone. We're not alone in this battle.
And, you know, it's so easy for us to succumb to our own battles within because of the fact that we feel so isolated and alone when we are going through different situations. And that's one of the reasons, you know, I do my retreat every year. I was sharing with you, Shanita, that September 12th and 13th, I'm doing Soul Retreat 2014, and it is transforming lives for the future, dealing with love, family, relationships and finance, because of the fact that we have to find a way to deal with the total man. What does that look like? What does that mean? Because there are people that are married that are living as though they were single and are strangers in their home to one another. Because, number one, they don't even know who they are. They're living together and have no idea who that other person is because they don't even know who they are. Then you have people that are in relationship because of convenience. They're conveniently together because it's cheaper to keep her, and it's also the fact that they don't want to be alone. They're not married, but yet they're dating, but it's convenient. Then you have people that are going through emotional turmoil that are single, can't find anyone because of the fact that they have emotional baggage that they're carrying that can't allow them to function in a fulfilled relationship. Then you have people that are going through financial problems. They don't know how to juggle their money and when the adversity came in our finances over the last few years, a lot of people took a nosedive and are slowly climbing their way up out of the ground, but still it's a struggle. So we'll be talking, covering all those different layers and aspects, and also the children. You know, one of the things that we always overlook is the fact that if we grown adults are going through situations in our lives, what makes us think that the children are okay if we're not okay?
So exactly.
I tried to cover all aspects of that at the retreat, and it is for men and women, married, single, divorced, dating, because of the fact that everyone has issue. And one of the signature parts of the retreat is I have the men in one section and the ladies in another, and we pull back the layers and we do real talk. And whatever goes on at the retreat or is said in those sessions stays in that session. And after that, we close out with a 70s party because I don't know what it is about the 70s. I just love it. I just love it. I don't know if it's because I didn't have any kids, no bills, no nothing. But I just love it. The music was so much better. And, you know,
well,
we had our afros and mini skirts and bell bottoms. So I figure we celebrate. That's when I feel free.
Oh, I'm a 70s girl myself, and I tell anybody, my daughter constantly she'll laugh when they talk about a new style or something that's coming out. I was like, well, we had that in the 70s. She's like, no, you didn't. I'm like, yeah. that was just a great era. The era of really, the reason I think we probably attached to that is because it was that era of self-expression. If you think about it, you know, that's the time that, you know, there was, black power going on, or there were civil rights movements going on, or there was even just that unity of peace, you know, through music and different things. And at the same time, people branching out, you know, expressing themselves in various ways, you know, from earlier, because from the 50s on up, you think about you had to be a certain way, act a certain way, you know, be very docile or conservative. And as it got into the 60s and 70s, that was more of a time of opening up and expressing yourself in a way that a lot of people wasn't ready for, you know. But for those of us that can relate to being kind of caged up, you know, and you know, made to be what we're not to please someone, when you get the opportunity to come out of that shell or to break out of that prison, that's true liberation. And it's a freedom that that allows you to, and I tell anybody, I said, I think my life, the last 3 years have been more exciting, not because of being single, but because just the ability to be able to go places without getting permission. You know,
wow.
To be able to shop and buy things without thinking, okay, if I'm not out of the store in 30 minutes, I'm going to have to argue tonight. Or, you know, doing things that were on someone else's scale and not your own. That's the true liberation for me. And oddly enough, one of the opening or defining factors was a friend of mine that I came to know going on 3 years ago. From a male's perspective, and that's another thing that we don't do a lot of, and you do it through your retreat when you bring in the males to talk and not just the women. Mm-hmm. But if we sit and listen to the men too, because there are men out there that go through things that we've gone through. There are men out there that do want to understand a woman. You know, we talk about being single parents, and most of the time it's the mothers raising the children. But there are some fathers out there that are dealing with and raising children by themselves that maybe
Absolutely.
Was not raised with their mother. Maybe they were raised by their grandmother or raised by their father. So we got to think of it. You know, a lot of times men do based off of what they're exposed to. And it's just a matter
exactly.
of us understanding and sharing and opening up and allowing them place to open up without them being. I put out a post on my blog about a month ago about men get tired too. And that particular wall post was shared almost 2,000 times. And I had so many men that say, about time, or finally, or women saying, gosh, I didn't think of it that way. Because we put a lot of burdens on the backs of men, and I had to rethink, and this is coming from me putting a mirror in front of myself, because to wonder why did marriage number one fail? Why did marriage number two fail? What is it that I'm doing that I need to do differently? And what I found is wait. Wait on God to present the opportunity for who he has for me in my life. Wait to make sure that I am mature within myself and prepared and ready for the emotional things that have to take place, and to also not settle for anything that I don't feel like that's what I should have, because we're all embedded. Whatever desires you have inside of you for your husband or a mate is placed there for a reason, because there is a mate that will accompany that, whether it's a man or the woman. But we tend to gravitate towards something that feels like or seems like, rather than trusting that God would bring you exactly what you ask for. You know, so and talking with my friend, and the thing he said was, well, what did you do? And you know, there's a lot of times we don't want to acknowledge what we do. It could be as simple as you stayed there and dealt with it, so what happened was really on you, because you could have walked away. It could be as simple as where you allowed him to have that much control, so that's what he did. So it's so many things that I had to stop and think, like, wow, okay, so maybe instead of not saying anything, and I'm thinking I'm keeping the peace in my home by not saying something. No, when it first happens, I need to be vocal and say, look, I don't agree with this, or this makes me feel this certain way, or this is not working, and then freeing them up to be able to do the same thing. So we got to listen to the men, too, and get their perspective about relationships, and also to make sure we seek God's face for the direction of our relationships. And having formats like this, you know, retreats that you have and that other people are doing, talking about it and getting back to that place of courtship and finding yourself first, you know, working on you, and then making sure that you're in a position where you can freely receive whoever's in your life. And it's either going to make the relationship that you have better, or it's going to make you in a better place to not take baggage into the next relationship.
Yeah, but it's so hard. It's easier said than done, because of the fact that we're chameleons. A lot of us are chameleons. We'll adapt because it's something that it appears that we want, and then we'll adapt so we can get it. And then when we get it, it's like, I don't want this again. But then so much emotion has gone into it that it winds up not only damaging you further, but that party that you're with, and that starts a cycle where, you know, then you dealt and crushed the emotion and self-esteem of that individual that you took into your space, and then he goes on damage and repeats that cycle. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, in doing the soul retreat, why I included the men, because like I said, I raised two sons that went through college, doctorate degrees, whole nine yards and stuff, and I had the opportunity to talk with them and listen to them, and I found out that that was one of the key things that have made them to be who they are, that they had the ability to communicate with me, not as their mother, but as a woman. So,
bingo.
And I was able to listen to them and be able to give them, you know, criticism and stuff, mm-hmm. but yet be on point where they didn't feel intimidated by it. And, you know, when my boy's getting ready to do something, they're going to call mama first and say, Mom, what you think yeah. about this? And, you know, my daughters are the same way. The key is we've got to learn how to communicate. And the only way we can communicate effectively is if we stand in our own shoes and stand upright and know who we are and speak from a place of knowing and a place of authority. And that's the only way we'll be able to destroy the yokes that are set on each in every individual's lives that are going through something. We can't function because we are broken. And until we can heal what hurts, we won't be able to function and move on and go into a fruitful relationship and stand in our own being liberated, as you say, in Rise of the Phoenix. It's time for all of us to rise.
Exactly. Well, you pulled out three key points. First one, model the behavior. And what you did with that when you with your sons, what I did with my sons, with what your co-host did with her sons, being able to talk to them and not at them and allowing them. That's the two things that my sons, even now, they're like, Mom, Dad, you're cool now. You know, I said, it's not so much being cool as now you're at a stage in your life where I can talk to you about those adult things and listen to you and you because you've seen the worst. Another key thing you brought out was communication. That's something mm-hmm. we lack in because we've been taught for so many centuries a woman's place, a woman's place. You don't say this. It's the man that says this, this, and this. And granted, I don't take anything from a man being the head of the household, but as long as God is his head, because he can't govern me if he's not governed, you know. And I make that known, and I tell when people, and trust me, I know my word, and I've studied in ministry. When people that's used so much to try to control a woman in the house, and you'll find some of the biggest controlling spirits are the men that are in the church, and that's because they pull that phrase out. Well, I'm the head of the household, or you're supposed to walk in agreement with me. Only if God is your head, if he's the head of your life, truly, then that means you will respect me as your wife, and I'm not your child, and I'm not your slave. I'm your wife. I'm your helpmeet. There's a reason why God pulled that rib from Adam to show that equal play, connection. That connection means you got to listen to me and my thoughts just as much as you want me to listen to you and yours. And if you walk in that place of love and there's no control there, what I mean by control, if your friends ask you, hey, we're having a women's conference such and such weekend, and it's Friday through Sunday. You're wondering, oh, my God, I don't know what my husband's going to say if I ask him for that. And he's asking, well, who's going to be there? When are you going to be there?
Mm-hmm.
Call me. And you're on a time schedule that if you don't answer that phone when it's ringing, you got to give somebody else on the phone to verify was, yeah, she was at such and such place. That's not a relationship, and that's not communication. That's control. A controlling factor. So we can learn how to communicate to where the husband or the wife feels comfortable with moving along in life without feeling intimidated, then that makes for a better relationship and trust. Because you know you can, your spouse trusts you for that, so you have no need to look anywhere else. And that third and final thing that you talked about, you know, setting these platforms with our kids to be able to talk to us in a manner that they get to know what we really went through. So pretty much testimony to individuals, right. Sharing our stories and not being ashamed of it. That was my biggest thing was what would someone think about me dealing with this? Mm-hmm. Or what would somebody, if they really knew what went on behind closed doors, how would they, take that? And I had to internalize it and say, you know what, there's other women out there that are dealing with my situation, and there's some men. So I got to share my testimony. And however they receive it, I pray that they can look at my life now and know that, okay, there's hope, because I was able to look at somebody else's life. And you mentioned earlier, it's not an easy thing to do, no. But it is well worth it, because the longer you stay in an unhealthy relationship, you're not only hurting yourself, the person you're with, and your children, but you're destroying the destiny that God really has for you, because you can't do anything productive for Him if you're still caught up in that cycle.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely correct. Now, in your book, Rise of the Phoenix, is it geared just towards, a liberation for women, or is it something that all can read, men, women, and children? Oh.
Yeah, all can read it, and I've written it in a way. Of course, it's more for this book is more for mature adults. I'm sure there would probably be high school or teenagers, that curiosity that would read it. But at least even with that, they would read how to have a healthy relationship. They will read and understand what is not healthy. I even wrote it, like I said earlier. My ex, some of the things that we went through is in there, but still his character in the end, it shows how they ended up becoming better friends than they were husband and wife, because they began to see that a lot of the things that they expected from one another was not able to be given, simply because they were forcing something that shouldn't have been in the beginning, because it didn't happen the right way. A lot of times when God tells us, he tells us to wait for a reason. But when we take it upon ourselves to do it, it's like, okay. And that's where we, as adults say, we make our bed hard, we have to lie in it. But you mm-hmm. learn from it. They punish us from it, but you learn from it. So the next time a door is open for you to have that, you'll know, okay, God ordained it. And you'll know it's God ordained, because you two are walking parallel paths. It's not a controlling factor. You shouldn't be crying 80 to 90% of the time in your relationship versus smiling. And if you are, something is deadly wrong. So, it's written for men to understand women and certain things that they go through. Because sometimes men do things, they've, for some reason, subconsciously separated themselves out from it, that they may feel that, I don't think I did anything wrong. But that's only because they're structured not to be emotional as we are, even though they do have emotions. And men in here will be able to relate to Mason's character, to Devin's character, and to also, look at it, maybe I need to rethink some things. So I've situated it so everybody that was destined to will get something out of it.
Wow, that's powerful. Because my first book, From the Soul of a Woman, Love Sharing Her, when I'm at events, and, I'm selling the book and stuff, and I tell the guys, and they say, what is your bestseller? And I say, well, From the Soul of a Woman. They're like, I don't want to read that girly book. I'm like, no, it's not a girly book. I said, it's actually my biography, a portion of my life. And then, now I have unlimited possibilities walking in purpose to avoid all of that. That's my first book on motivation. But From the Soul of a Woman, the guys that did get it, they actually wrote me back and called me and said that it was an excellent book, and they see why it is my bestseller, because I was very transparent in it, and, I spoke from my perspective, from my heart, and also the foundation that I laid was a powerful foundation for them that they could actually know how to treat their wives and their girlfriends that they were dating at the time, and also how to handle their children. So that was that, you know, that is real powerful that, you know, when we're writing books, men that are listening, read them, because it will give you insight to what's in our head, what's in our hearts, and then you'll learn how to deal with us. Just like we're constantly learning how to deal with you in a loving manner to give you the respect and the headship that you desire and should have. Because I strongly believe that the man is the head of the household because he is the protector, and that's the way it is. God is never going to change his law to accommodate us regardless of what we feel or think.
Exactly. And that's a good thing because
I hear a lot of feedback and noise. So.
Okay, what about now?
Okay.
But, yeah, that's a great thing because that's one of the things I share with, like I said, with my sons, with my brothers, even with my dad. I'm like, you know, if you – and the Bible just tells us that, you know, love your wife as you love yourself. You know, don't do anything to your wife that you wouldn't want done to your own body. And basically all he's saying is –
Yeah, but that's also a scary part, Shanita. That's also a scary part because a lot of guys don't love themselves. It's like a lot of women don't love themselves, so how can they love us?
That's what I was going to say, that because that part, it speaks, it's really as simple, and we make it more complicated because we don't want, you know, a lot of times we either don't know how to yield or have been given a wrong examples of how to do that. But basically that's what I said earlier. You have to work on yourself. You have to get to know who you are and be okay with you before you can be a benefit to anybody else. So that's why he says, love your wife as you love yourself. If you don't love yourself, then you're not going to know how to love your wife. If you treat her the way that you've been treated, then you're not going to know how to treat her right, because we're not supposed to treat people the way they treat us. We're supposed to treat them according to the way God tells us to treat each other. And that's not always an easy task, especially if you're not familiar with it, if you don't know how. And that's why it to me is so important for me. I got in an intimate relationship with God for myself. A lot of people ask me, are you real religious? I said, no, I have a relationship. And it was that intimate relationship that I don't hide anything from him. I can't, because he sees everything. So if I'm dealing with an issue, whether it's with the flesh or mentally or spiritually, I'm like, Daddy, okay, I need help right there, you know. And I'm just open to it. And I share with people. I don't try to make them do anything or tell them to do anything. I can't practice myself. I'll explain to them straight, and that's one thing a lot of individuals say they love about me, is that, well, you keep it real. Yeah, I don't know any other way to do it because I've worn a mask for so long. You know, I've had to argue that morning or doctor up bruises and go to work and put a smile on my face as if nothing has happened, you know, simply to keep others from knowing what was going on in my little world. So now I'm in a place in my life where I want to be transparent with people. And I tell you if I'm able to do it, if I'm not able to do it, if this is what I feel or if it's not. Where I used to keep my mouth shut and go behind closed doors and deal with it on my own, now I say, I didn't like the way you say that, or that hurt me. Or we need to talk about it. Or if we're not able to talk right now, then we need to step back from the situation until we are able to, so we don't say things that we'll regret. You know, so it's just about setting priorities and making sure those priorities align up with what God wants us to do. And a lot of people, you know, they say, well, what do you do about people that don't believe in God or whatever? Whatever that spiritual place is for you. You know, that's where you have to take it in order to make it work for you. But for Nita, I had to get in an more intimate relationship with God for the strength and for direction of where I'm going. I've done so much in the last 3 years, thank God. And all I can say is, not in this interview, but later, if people really knew what I had to go through to get where I am now, it'll be amazing.
Shanita, your book, Eyes of the Phoenix, where can they find it, and how can individuals find out more information about you on the different websites they can go to, and where can they find you on a daily basis?
Okay. I'm sharing about my book now, but it won't go released until July. It'll be released in July. So right now I'm sharing and talking about it to build up momentum so individuals will be looking out for it. But it will be released in July, and people can look at my and I have several places that I just give the individuals. They can look me up on Facebook under Shernita Wiggins, or they can look on my Facebook page, Purposeful Living for Life's Journey, for my blog, to keep up with things that I'm doing, and as well as Trinity Entertainment Productions. Believe it, I know everybody's not on Facebook, so there I do have a website or a web page, Trinity Entertainment Productions. Weebly, weebly.com. I usually post a lot of things pertaining to my production company and also Karma Velocity Epiphany Moments that shares some of my upcoming books and a lot of the poetry that I write. So, you know, there's a lot of places out there to get me, but most people hit me up on Facebook and then they gravitate to the other sites. But, you know, I'm out and about here in Atlanta. I write for a major magazine at the time, so I'm at a lot of events and covering things. So you just keep watching out, keep listening out to your show. I'll keep you all updated so you'll be able to know what's going on.
Excellent. I actually will be back in Atlanta. I'm coming to Atlanta this weekend, by the way.
Okay, well, make
but
me
I will. Yeah, but I will be back there for an event May 16th and 17th with Les Brown, Ona Brown, and Dr. Clarence Scranage, Alan Seeley, Alan McDougall, Novi Woods, Clayton M. Ramos, and Clarissa Carter. It's called Live Your Dreams in 2014 Total Entrepreneur Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. If you want further information about that, you can go to the website. There is a website called dreamspeaker.org. That's dreamspeaker.org. You can go on and purchase your ticket. It's a two-day event. Les Brown is speaking the first night. There are workshops the second day. And the total cost for both days is $49. So seats are limited, so please go and register. It's $49. It is called dreamspeaker.org. And, again, Les Brown, you know, I've been representing Les Brown for 17 years, so that's why I'm pushing the event, but I will be there.
Well,
and,
I'll be looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And I'll be, you know, visiting Atlanta this weekend. My daughter lives there, so I'm excited, always excited about seeing her. And also, visit my website, www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. And those of you that are listening that want more further information on Shernita Wiggins and didn't get her information, you feel free to email me at soultopics@gmail.com. That's soultopics@gmail.com. We only got a few seconds left. Any closing remarks, Shernita? I told you we were going to run out of time. We usually do.
The only thing I want to leave everyone with is always stay true to you. That's a phrase that a friend of mine shared with me, and it has been very impacting to me, and has become my motto. Stay true to you about yourself, about your relationships, and anything that you incorporated. And you can live that purposeful life. You can live the and walk in the purpose and calling that you're called for.
Thank you so much. Thank you again, Shernita Wiggins, for joining in. Thank you, Shirley Carter. And I look forward to hearing you all on the waves next week, another Hot Topics from the Soul. Good night and God bless.
Thank you for having me.